My name is Marcella Bélanger-Violette, the daughter, the only daughter and child of Mr. and Mrs. Émile Bélanger. My mother was Cécile Sirois, daughter of Francis Sirois and Amélie Morneau. I'm married to Elmer Violette, the mother of five children, four sons, one daughter, Dennis, Mark, Paul, Tom, and Louise. I would like to say a few words now on the topic of my valley, my people. My valley, of course, being the St. John River Valley. My people, the Acadian, or sometimes we refer to them as the Canadian Acadians, because we have a mixture here in the valley of Canadian as well as Acadian blood. By Canadian, I mean the Canadiens de la Nouvelle-France from the what is now the province of Quebec. We have been for so long hung up on a melting pot concept of our nation that we have failed to see the real truth about the United States. That truth, that fact, cette vérité, puis-je dire, that fact is that our national greatness derives from the contribution made by the many groups that really make up our population. We must come to understand and to accept that in this country, the United States of America, there is really an American mosaic of peoples. We, all of us together, must come to grips with the basic fact that we are united in this great nation of ours in the richness of diversity, and we must come to appreciate all the aspects of that diversity. A heritage that is centuries old, as is ours here in this valley, that heritage cannot be discounted. It cannot be dismissed. That, to me, is to a degree almost sacrilegious, discounting such a heritage. A positive future, one's future, my future, can't possibly be strongly and firmly constructed without serious attention to the past, one's personal past. We build a positive, a meaningful, a worthy future, not by wiping out the past, but rather we build this future by recognizing, by understanding, yes, by admitting this past, by admitting who we are. In our case, Americans of French descent. That's our very foundation. One's past is not an enclave within which one is protected. Rather, it is the ground on which one stands. It is a base from which one ventures forth, a home from which one goes out and to which one may return periodically. In this country, by and large, there's virtually no attempt made to put ethnic minority groups in touch with their own cultural history. We wonder why. Has anyone ever been given authority to state that minority groups and heritage and history are not important enough? Lacking knowledge of one's roots, it oftentimes becomes difficult to grow up, difficult to mature without becoming somewhat defensive. I, for one, am most proud to be who I am and what I am. Perhaps because of the type of home atmosphere that I had from the very first, always being told by my mother and my father that I really was worth as much as anyone else on the face of the earth. I was worth no more, neither was I worth no less. But that what was important was what I did with my life, and that I had to do myself. Now, for a few very general notes on who these Acadians in the valley really are. Where are they from, for instance? We know that the Acadians in L'Ancienne Acadie, what is now Nova Scotia, were deported in 1755, and here I will not go into any details about that. We know that at that time, really, there were Acadians living along both sides of the southern part of the St. John River Valley. We know also that there have been, or there were at that time, Acadians living, or at least coureurs des bois, the mail carriers who certainly knew the upper parts of the St. John River Valley, the northern area of that valley. So in 55, therefore, we know that there are some Acadians outside of the real large concept of Nova Scotia itself. After 55, and really from 55 up until almost 50 years later, we see the migrations, the travelings of these Acadians, always perhaps pursued by the Anglo-Saxon, later on by the Loyalist. But the first upsurge of moving up into the northern area of the St. John River Valley really came after the end of the American Civil War, the American Revolutionary War. And that was probably even beginning around 1775 through 1763 and so forth, with the Loyalists coming into Nova Scotia, being given or being told to go up the St. John River Valley. And what happens there? They find Acadians there. These naturally are squatters. They don't have any legal rights to the land. And of course, feeling unappreciated, perhaps misunderstood and not understood at all, because these Acadians had an entirely different background from the Loyalists and the British who were trying to settle there, a difference in religion also. These people were French-speaking, they were Roman Catholic. So after really a great deal of suffering, they decided to start asking for lands, for grants, up the St. John River Valley. So the southern part of the St. John Valley was kept for the Loyalists and the British immigrants, and the northern part was more or less offered to our Acadians. Now we know that a first large group of them arrived in this area in about 1785. We know that they came from what was then called La Mission de Sainte-Anne, which is now Fredericton, in the province of New Brunswick. We know that about that time, one of our celebrated first pioneers in this area, Jean-Baptiste Cyr, had really said to the Lord, "Le bon Dieu n'a-t-il donc pas sur toute cette terre un endroit où les pauvres Cayens puissent reposer leur tête?" I believe that our Acadian ancestors really wanted to be alone. They really wanted to have a place where they could worship God as they wished, speak the tongue of La Douce France, and to live their life according to the way they wanted to. All along this, really, this pilgrimage up the valley, the Maliseets were very good friends to our Acadian ancestors. About 1787, we find about 20 families in this area. And about 1790, we read that grants were finally legalized, and some received about 200 acres, some perhaps more, some a little less. Exactly how many is really not important. The fact is that about 1790, the grants were legalized, and of course they were given under Governor Carleton, whose brother was Governor Dorchester in the province of Quebec at that time. We know that of them at that time, it was said that these Acadians subsist chiefly on pea soup and children, they have no end to them. We know that the fruits of God's earth were very simple for our Acadians. And we know, of course, that their family was perhaps their prized possession. Our people here in this area were simply out of circulation. Perhaps that didn't make too much difference to them. They had very few contacts, except with perhaps Rivière-du-Loup and Fredericton, and later with itinerant peddlers. The rest of the state of Maine was simply ignorant of the valley. Of course, we know that at this time, Maine was still part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. From 1793 to 1842, this area that we now call our St. John Valley, this region, was highly contested by England and the United States. People were really fending for themselves. They do little to better their economic way of life, we're told, but I believe that they were so very happy to be here that their own way of life, doing it the way they wanted to, doing their thing, as we say, was what really mattered. In 1820, Maine becomes a state, separates from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The importance of the forests here in this upper part of the state, especially the pines, to be used for masts for the sailing ships in the Gulf of Maine, that really interested the state. Of course, we start to have even before the statehood of Maine, we really see about 1817 Yankee families coming up to the northern part of our area. I will just mention a few names. Certainly I will not mention them all, but we have Baker, Harvey, Scott, Bacon, Rice, Harford, Maddox, Wheelock, Savage. These came up to what is now the Fort Kent area. Here in our Van Buren area, a little bit later, however, we have such names as Bradbury, Hammond, Gould, Smith, Keegan, Bradbury, to mention but a few. Farrell is another name also. Now in 1842, the Webster-Ashburton Treaty finally settles the frontier of the state of Maine. After almost a half century of bickering between the two nations. We know that many Acadians wished to remain American citizens. We know also that some wished to become British citizens. But, as turned out, the area was really divided, and we know that 2,000 of the Acadian people in the valley were now American subjects. When Dean and Kavanaugh came in 1831 for their survey, they knew this fact, and they stated that in their data. Maine claimed that she had lost a great deal of territory. Canada claimed the same. There's really no saying, because we know that according to the old feats and the old reports, it's very hard to decide exactly what les hauteurs, or the highlands, really meant. I've mentioned that in 1831, Dean and Kavanaugh were sent by the governor to report on their findings in this very northernmost region of the state of Maine. Kavanaugh had been elected a U.S. Senator. He also worked with Webster and Ashburton on the treaty. He was sent up, most probably because he was a Catholic and he could speak French very fluently. He found the Acadians to be very self-sufficient. He spoke of early farming in this area. He spoke of potatoes, of buckwheat, of oats. He also spoke of the gardens, the vegetable gardens, fruit trees. He mentioned flour mills, sawmills, blacksmiths, and so forth. He also mentioned the fact that faith and family and language, these three, high-noted the whole life of the Acadian. He also found some Québécois among the Acadian settlers, but always L'Acadien predominated in numbers. He states in his report that L'Acadien was very gay, he loved his neighbor, he had a great deal of love for his God, and that he mentions priest as a very important change agent. Also mentions the very close family bond. May I say here the very important saying in French for the Acadian? La famille d'abord, il reste. Si la famille est forte, si la famille est unie, tout le reste viendra par surcroît. Traditions proved much stronger than forces of the wilderness here in this valley. The promise of an Acadian was compared to that of something in the Bible. His word was all important. Let's not forget that the Acadian in this valley transplanted his social, his cultural institutions to this frontier, and that these were French and that they were Roman Catholic. The Acadian lived by custom and tradition. Transaction was mostly always by word of mouth at this time, oftentimes witnessed by the local missionary or priest. The land agent sent by the governor was of utmost importance at this time in this area. Let me mention that in 1857, the railroad reaches the uppermost parts of the state of Maine. That brought a tremendous change. And as an offshoot of the railroad, quite a bit later, however, it's good to know that in 1911, October 13th to be exact, electricity. The sisters tell us, the nuns at the convent, the first light bulb in the convent was lit on October 13th. What about the Civil War and the Valley? In 1861, we see a great emigration out of our area. We know that about 150 of our young men played their role in the Civil War. We also had a little later somewhat of an emigration to the west of the United States and even to Western Canada. We know from records that in 1870, we had between 8,500 to 9,000 people in this district called La Vallée du Madawaska. We know that Madawaska is an Indian name meaning land of the porcupines. If in 1870 we had about 9,000 people, in 1900 we had approximately 16,000. In 1970, not quite 20,000. Our people seem to almost be forced to migrate again out of the area to our city centers, for lack of work here. Now, what about the role of the church? The area was under the Canadian diocese until 1870. In that year, there was a separation, a diocesan separation. And this northern area of the state, this valley, was placed within the Diocese of Portland with Bishop Bacon as its bishop. In October of 1870, Bishop Bacon made his first visit in this area. And he was acclaimed by the populace. We're told that they went to greet him at the Aroostook River. Now, let's not forget that the cradle of the Madawaska Valley is really Saint Basile. It was there that the first missionary really had a small chapel constructed for him. But remember that at that time, both sides of the river were really British territory. Van Buren, at that time called Grande Rivière and later Ruisseau des Violettes, possessed a rather small chapel about 1820. And about that time, Van Buren had approximately 350 inhabitants. The chapel was dedicated in 1827 and canonically recognized by the Pope in 1838. So in 1938, Van Buren, the parish of St. Bruno, celebrated its 100th anniversary with grandiose fete. Still, our area, what we now call Van Buren and Madawaska and Fort Kent and all the towns in between, still was in rather total isolation. Van Buren at that time, that is the parish of St. Bruno, served a very large area from Van Buren, North Caribou, and as far as Woodstock. In 1884, the Marist Fathers arrived in our area. Up until that time, we had had diocesan fathers and other religious priests. From that time on, including this year of 1972, we have had Marists serving in our parish. In 1887, the Marist Fathers opened a college here called St. Mary's College. I would like to mention that in 1878, the Madawaska Training School was officially opened in what is now Fort King. 1891, the Good Shepherd Sisters arrived here from Quebec at the urgent insistence of Le Bon Père Marcel. We're told that it took them 3 days to arrive here from Quebec. Let me mention also that in 1904, the Sisters of Wisdom, Les Bonnes Sœurs de la Sagesse, arrived in our area and settled in Sainte-Agathe. They had a very large boarding school. My own mother-in-law, Mrs. Vital Violette, whose maiden name was Estelle Boissé, graduated from that high school to enter Madawaska Training School and after 1 year's training to become a teacher in the valley. The elementary boarding school in Sainte-Agathe closed in 1953 and the high school boarding school closed in 1965. The system of education changed. Now we have high schools and elementary schools in all of our villages and therefore there really was no need for boarding schools. Upper Frenchville, whose parish was St. Luce, was founded in 1843. I would just like to mention very, very briefly in passing that the life of our Acadian people centered really around the liturgical year, beginning with Advent, L'Avent, because let's not forget that the faith of our forefathers in this area was really an unshakable faith, une foi inébranlable, une foi vraiment de tradition, une foi qui est vraiment touchante et émouvante. From Advent with its penance to Christmas with its tortillère, and then going on to the preparation for Easter, a very difficult Lenten preparation, and then to the joys of Easter with l'eau de Pâques. Always very close to the church, whether they had to come by horse and buggy, whether it would take them an overnight trip, whatnot, our people were very close to God, through God's soil, and through his church and his priests. We know from what we read, what we're told by tradition, that oftentimes the priest was first consulted, even after there were doctors in our area. The priest, naturally, was one of the very few who could read and write. He was a great consoler of people. The priest had a great deal of compassion and understanding, was one with the people. Now, what about education here in this northern part of Maine, this valley of the St. John, this Vallée des Acadiens? Well, I must say that at the very beginning, most of our people could neither read nor write. They just had no opportunity. Remember, I have said that for almost 50 years they were migrating here, there, and everywhere. When one has really no place to call his own, when one has no roots, how can one think of the finer things of life, even of basic culture? At such a time, the most important things in life are food and shelter. Reading and writing came later, most probably by ambulating teachers. We have no report really on the condition or the situation of education in our valley until about 1831, and I've mentioned here this report by Dean and Cavanaugh. We're told that there were three schools in the entire Madawaska region. Now that, when I say Madawaska, I don't mean the present town of Madawaska. I mean that the entire area, which now encompasses Fort Kent and the town of Madawaska and the town of Mandarin, plus Frenchville, Grand Isle, Lille, St. Agatha, Sinclair, and so forth, all of that was called the Madawaska area. And there were three schools in 1831 in this region. Not much was really taught. There was school when a teacher was available. Until the Treaty of 1842, the Treaty of the Frontiers, 95% of the people in this area were said to not be reached by education. James Madigan is a name that must not be forgotten for this area. He was sent up in this area by the governor to become the educational supervisor for the entire area. He was an education commissioner. He also taught American Constitution, taught the Bill of Rights to the people, and he sort of tried to reorganize whatever school system there was, if it can be called such. Our people really wished to learn, but they had really hardly any money to construct schools. And so Madigan realized that the state must come to their help. I cannot forget also at this time a man who was very important in pushing education in this Madawaska area. His name is Major Dickey. And he came to this area about 1849. And he really helped develop what was then called the Madawaska Training School, then became Madawaska College, and is now the University of Maine at Fort Kent. It's part of the Super University. In 1866, we had approximately 7 schoolhouses in this Madawaska region. In 1771, the area was not treated any longer as one entire section under one land agent. It was placed under county education commissioners instead of under the state commissioner. One name that really comes to mind here as a giant in the field of education in our valley is Le Père Sueron. In the upper valley of the St. John, he developed a rather important school at Dickeyville. He sustained that school financially with his own money, and he sustained it almost by himself. And there were 3 teachers in that schoolroom at that time, which was quite something unusual for our area. In 1878, the Madawaska Training School was opened, and at that time it alternated between Van Buren and Fort Kent, until in 1887 it was really located permanently in Fort Kent. From 1878 to 1970, roughly 1,900 young men and women have received either diplomas or degrees from that institution. Frankly, it's my own personal opinion that I don't know what our area would have done without that Madawaska Training School. On the role of education, I want to really firmly state here my opinion. I don't know what we would have done without the teaching sisters in our whole Madawaska area. I would feel really like raising my hat to these tremendous women. Les Sœurs de la Sagesse, les Sœurs du Bon Pasteur, les Sœurs du Saint-Rosaire, les petites franciscaines de Marie. Je lève mon chapeau à vous. Vous avez été de braves pionnières et je vous en remercie de tout cœur pour tous les gens de la vallée et leur postérité. In 1887, another important date for the whole valley, Marist College opens here under the Marist Fathers to close in 1926. When it was relocated in Bedford and Framingham, Massachusetts. And here, of course, we meet now with so many people who graduated from that wonderful school. Now, just a very few jottings here that might interest people in the future and even now. We know, we see in records, we're told by old school teachers that early a teacher might receive $6 per month in wages, that he or she might pay $1 per week for board and room. Later on, we've had teachers who earned $10 per month. board and room, and $12 a week a little later on. We know that the town itself paid more, but la concession, or the tier area, paid much less. And we know that teachers preferred naturally teaching in the town schools. I know an aunt of mine has told me that she loved going to school, but couldn't go very often. She attended school when there was a teacher, and that pained her very much. In 1850, we know from records that Van Buren received $242 from the state for a school fund.